You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
San Antonio Spurs playoff streak ended at 22 years in a row last night. Pretty remarkable. In the salary cap era, you know, when we talk about dynasties, it's a little bit different than what a dynasty was back in the 50s or 60s or 70s. They won five championships between 1999 and 2014. But they didn't really have that ability to capture the public's imagination, like Kobe's Lakers or the great Warriors teams, what LeBron did with the Miami Heat. And that probably has a lot to do with Greg Popovich and the team's biggest star, Tim Duncan. Their style of play wasn't flashy, didn't make a lot of highlight reels. They just played fundamental basketball and some good defense there. But we'll see what happens with Pop here, because he's 71 years of age. He lost his wife. And I'm not sure if we'll see Greg Popovich coach again. Just a guess. Maybe he'll walk away. Maybe he'll want to get, you know, reinvigorated here with the young players and find a way to get the most out of them and maybe create another dynasty there. But congratulations to a great coach, great franchise, great fan base that should feel extremely proud now, even though they didn't make it into the playoffs. The Blazers and Grizzlies are set for the last spot in the West. The East is already set. We'll talk to Mannix, because I thought the Blazers were going to expend a lot of energy just to get here, and then what kind of team will we see if they get past Memphis? They only need to win one. Memphis needs to win two, and then your reward is playing a Laker team that's rested. And the Blazers' defense is maybe the worst in the bubble, because the Nets last night, and I will give credit to the Nets, they have played hard. They, of course, don't have Durant. They don't have Kyrie. Dinwiddie was not there as well, and they played hard every single night. And, you know, the Nets caught everybody's attention when they beat the Bucks, and they were 18.5-point underdogs, one of the biggest upsets in, you know, the last 25 years in NBA history. But the Blazers held on to win last night as they beat the Nets, and the Grizzlies are now in there in the last spot. So those two are going to play. They may have, you know, maybe playing three games here, but Blazers, if they can knock them off. I wouldn't be surprised if Memphis won the first game, believe it or not, because the Blazers and Damian Lillard, they just look spent. C.J. McCollum came through. He's got the bad back, had a nice performance last night as well. But here is Damian Lillard after last night's victory.
I mean, I could shoot a, I could pull up from half court comfortably. The only reason I haven't done it is because I don't want to push it that far consistently, because that's just crazy. But I'm gonna do it in one of these games. Watch. No, literally, yeah. From the half court line. Watch.
He was 6 of 9.
Oh my
Look
goodness!
Look at this shot by Lillard.
Oh my goodness! Oh-ho! That was from the Woo! NBA logo.
I can't wait to look at my cohorts and say, he told me he was going to do that. He told me while we were waiting for the season to get back in, he was going to launch one from half court.
That's Damian Lillard with Ernie Johnson and Charles Barkley. That's from April of 2020. And he did that last night. And it's not a heave. And here's Reggie Miller on the call. And Reggie's one of the great deep shooters in NBA history. And when he gets out of his seat watching it, and it's effortless too. That's what's amazing. Because if you've taken an NBA three, it's a man size three. I mean, you got to be able to have some lift. You got to have strength there. But Damian Lillard, if I add, you know, 15 to 18 feet more, and he's shooting from the logo. With all due respect to Jerry West, Damian Lillard might be the logo if he's going to be pulling up from that kind of range there. But that was, he had an impressive run. When you're averaging 50 the last three games of the regular season, that's an impressive way to go out and maybe go into the postseason. I just don't know. He looked exhausted last night. And now you have to turn around. And look, Memphis is shorthanded without Jaren Jackson. But Memphis, maybe Memphis cobbles together, four quarters and they could extend this a little bit. But I wouldn't be surprised if Memphis won the first game in this series. Yes, McLovin.
How would you try and stop Damian Lillard if you're playing against the Blazers?
Well, I've yet to see somebody do it from the standpoint of, if I let you have the jumper, It feels like with a lot of these scores, you just have to decide, what do I want to give you and what am I trying to take away? And I don't know if you say, I'm going to let him shoot those jumpers and let him, you know, live and die with that. That's what I would do with Harden. Harden, I would say, you take the jumper. I'm not going to let you get in the paint and create contact and go to the free throw line. I don't want you to put my team in foul trouble. I guess I would say to Lillard or my team, I'm going to let him shoot those jumpers because I don't think you can stop him. Also, with the way you handle the basketball now, back when I played, maybe 10 years ago, that would be called a carry. Now, the way you can handle a basketball, I can get by you. I can get around you. And nobody calls that anymore. Just watch. Watch a game now. Go back and watch something from the 70s or 80s. You would never get away with that. This ability to be able to create your shot because you can take your hand on the side of the ball and you have this quickness and they just stop on a dime as well. And you saw that with Lillard last night. He's able to create a shot. James Harden is able to create that shot. But I want you shooting a three. I don't want you going inside. That would be what I would try. And then they always talk about, well, you force a guy who shoots right-handed, force him to his left. Well, this just in, folks, those guys who shoot and they're right-handed practice so much going to their left because you force them to go to their left. It's not like they go, oh, wait, I got to go to my left now? Now, the only guy I would say probably would have problems with that was Ginobili. You'd force him to go to his right, but he was so great that he would eventually get back to his left hand, his left side, and he would still somehow beat you. But Damian Lillard's on a roll. I don't know how long you can continue that. Just the energy that it takes is incredible with what he's been able to do. By the way, this program brought to you by Raycon, buyraycon.com/Patrick. 15% off these great wireless earbuds, buyraycon.com/Patrick. Bob Hill was the Spurs head coach in 1995-96. Spurs went 59-23. Next season, David Robinson got hurt. They went 20-62. Bob Hill got fired. Popovich got hired. Spurs draft Tim Duncan. Two seasons later, Spurs win the title.
It's the greatest injury in sports history.
David Robinson got hurt. They drafted Tim Duncan, and it changed the NBA. Changed the NBA. All right, we'll come up with a poll question here. Mannix will join us from the bubble. NextGreatPodcast.com. Details there. You ever wanted to have a pitch and say, hey, I got a podcast idea, now is your chance. We're going to select up to 10 semifinalists, give you $1,000 to produce a pilot episode, your podcast, and then listeners from around the country will vote on the next great podcast. And I will be in business with you. I came up with the idea a couple of months ago, reached out to iHeartRadio, our radio partners, and they love the idea to give you an opportunity during this pandemic. You want somebody to hear your idea, now you have a chance. It's called nextgreatpodcast.com, and I hope to work with you. McLovin, what do you have for me?
Okay, was the Spurs dynasty good for the NBA? And the options are no and no.
On a Friday, you're going to do that.
Thank God LeBron came along and saved the NBA because the Spurs were making it irrelevant. And you all know it, and I'm sorry to my San Antonio listeners, but...
You don't have any listeners.
There are San Antonio listeners.
Yeah. Ours. You don't have any.
Did I say my listeners?
Yeah. My San Antonio listeners.
The best.
Thank you.
That's why the NFL, by the way, ratings started skyrocketing from 2008 to 2014 with this.
Was the San Antonio Spurs?
Okay. Real poll question.
Okay.
If you could buy stock in one of these two teams, the Suns or the Pelicans?
See, I think there's some issues with the Pelicans. I might buy into the Suns, believe it or not. Because David Aldridge, a veteran NBA reporter, said that he had sources saying that Lonzo Ball checked out in the bubble. And he played like he didn't care. J.J. Redick, I don't know how much longer he's going to play, and you can't rely on him to be, you know, that great weapon off the bench. Brandon Ingram, a restricted free agent, is he going to stay? Zion Williamson's health, they may change coaches because now the buzz is if you you fire Alvin Gentry, you might bring in Mike D'Antoni if the Rockets don't go to the NBA Finals. So that's just some of the talk that's going on in the bubble right now. I love Monty Williams as a head coach. I think he's just a good man, and he's proven to be a really good coach too. Then you got him in Phoenix. I might look at Phoenix, believe it or not, because there's uncertainty though. I thought Lonzo Ball getting out of LA was going to take that next step, and he showed signs of doing that during the regular season, but not in the bubble. Zion, the health issue, his weight, that is going to be something that is going to be there for quite some time. That question mark. And then Ingram, you're going to bring him back? What else are you going to do? Who else are you going to bring in? Can you bring in free agents? Now, that's another thing. Who's going to want to go to New Orleans to play? And I don't know. But I would probably take the Phoenix Suns right now, believe it or not. Yeah, McLevin.
So what's with all the Suns hype? Because I look at their roster, Ricky Rubio is like 100. He's running the point.
Yeah.
And Booker, is he going to stay?
No, wait, no, they just signed him up.
Oh, yeah.
He got a $150 million deal.
I thought Draymond was running him out of town, getting him to the Knicks.
I don't know what Draymond is talking about.
And is Ayton good? That was my other question.
I think he's good. I don't think he's great. But they're all so young. Like, we get tired of them because, you know, they go into the league so early. And DeAndre Ayton is 22. That's when you start your career. Now we feel like we know who you are at 22. Like, oh, that's as good as he's going to be. But if he's going to give you 18 and 12, are you satisfied with 18 and 12 from DeAndre Ayton? Now, you might say, that's not what I want out of my center, but 18 and 12, all right, I'll sign up for that right now. I'm okay with that. Booker's a legitimate star. But yeah, you're right with Ricky Rubio. He's played well. That's not your future there. Yes, McLovin.
Yeah, see, I don't know what a center does for you. That's my question. Like, can you win with a center in today's NBA?
Well, you have to have a center.
Right, kind of center.
Yeah, that's what I don't know. I mean, he has a good shot. I don't know what are his numbers of shooting-wise? What's his free throw percentage?
Ayton?
Yeah.
He's a 75% free throw shooter.
Okay, I'm okay with that if he keeps getting – if you get him to around – because he has a nice shot. If I get him to around close to 80%, 77, 78%, that's pretty good for my big man. And Rubio's not even 30. So, which is weird. It feels like Rubio's been around a really long time. But he's still not. That's not my starting point guard. At least I wouldn't want that as my starting point guard. Yes, McLovin.
Doesn't DeAndre Ayton have the Luka draft issue too? Like, he'll be measured again. He went 1, Bagley 2, Luka 3. That makes it look kind of worse.
And the fact that you had Luka's coach, who was with the Phoenix Suns, and they didn't take him. And Sacramento didn't take him. Like, Sacramento's a mess. Sacramento is going to be a mess. Because I don't think they know who they are, what they are, and what they want to do in the future. And I think you saw that in the bubble. I think there's some the real issues there with the Sacramento Kings as we move forward. What else do you have, McLovin? Then we'll take a break.
We had a little pre-show debate. Do you think Big Ten football should play in the spring? Because the Purdue coach, is it Jeff Brohm, threw out a plan yesterday where they would start in February and end in May.
We should clarify this. It's not spring football. It would be winter football. Now, here's another thing, and my source on all of this. By the way, do you realize where we were on Monday morning at this time when I was telling you what was going to be happening with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten? And it feels like college football is kind of settling with the Big 12, ACC, and the SEC. We know about the other sports. We know about, the lower divisions of college football not going to be playing. But it feels like maybe we're a little more stabilized with college football than we ever thought we would be. And as I said on Monday, we'll know by Friday where we are with college football. I don't know if we know that yet, but keep this in mind. It's winter football in the Big Ten. Just think about that. There's no domes here. You're playing in Ohio State in January, Wisconsin, Michigan. And if I'm a top or potential top draft pick, do I want to be playing? If I'm Justin Fields, do I want to be playing games in January in inclement weather? And not even sure if I'm going to have a full season there. It could only hurt him because you're not going to be putting up those numbers that you would normally put up when the games are in September, October, and November. Now you're going to be in January and February in the Midwest? Can't see it happening. Can't. We'll take a break. Mannix will join us coming up, get his thoughts on everything going on in the bubble. How about most minutes played in the bubble? Two top guys play on the same team. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. Also fourth on the list, Carmelo Anthony. Sixth on the list, Gary Trent Jr. with Portland. Blazers, they could be gassed. They could be limping toward. That's another thing with the Lakers. They may catch a break if they face Portland because of everything that Portland has been through. It was either going to be, boy, they're in playoff mode, or they're on fumes right now. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. We'll check in with Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated, their senior NBA writer. During the commercial break, I gathered the Danettes together, and I said, should we play something that Mannix said back in September about the Lakers? And it was universal. Everybody said yes. So this is what Mannix said about the Lakers.
You know, I get killed every year talking about the Lakers with you because I tend to be more skeptical as I was last season. But is it not more likely that the Lakers miss the playoffs than win a championship? I think that.
Wait, this year?
That way right now. This year.
So the odds are better that they miss the playoffs than they win the championship?
I would say so, yes.
Wow. Okay. Let's bring in Chris Mannix, who joins us from the bubble. Do you stand by that?
Kind of impossible to stand by that, Dan.
I was just trying to give you an out there.
No. I mean, at the time, Lakers were, you know, bringing in a bunch of new players. I know Anthony Davis was one of them. At the time, LeBron James was coming off the most significant injury of his career. It seemed more likely that they missed the playoffs.
You don't have to defend yourself. I'm just having fun. You're a great sport. You're a great sport.
I'd like to defend myself because it stood true back then. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that was like late September, early October.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like that. Come on. That's not even one of my greatest hits. Like, that's not even.
Oh, it's not? Oh,
no.
Well, Paulie, can we cue up some of Mannix's greatest hits here?
You have to be more specific.
Do you think this is it for Greg Popovich?
It's a tough call. I mean, he didn't leave any breadcrumbs last night after the game. There's long been an assumption that Popovich would be done after the 2020 Olympics. Obviously, those didn't happen right now, so perhaps we could see him coach one more year and then ride off into the sunset after the Olympics in 2021. But, you know, next year is very cloudy, Dan. Like, what's going to happen with the start of the season? I mean, there was some reporting by ESPN this week that Michelle Roberts, who I spoke to last week, told the players that be prepared for a start time in January or in March. You know, will Popovich look at that and say, look, I got a team that's not a contender. I want to coach in the Olympics no matter what. Do I walk away and hand the reins off to somebody else? So even though he didn't, you know, say he was done now, I think there'll be a lot of thought into going into that over the next few months.
And I thought he positioned Becky Hammond to take over for him. And I talked to Nancy Lieberman, the Hall of Famer, about this. And then he brings in Tim Duncan. Does Tim Duncan want to be a head coach?
I don't get that sense. I don't get that sense that Tim Duncan wants. I think Tim Duncan likes the coaching part. I don't think he likes everything else that goes along with it, which includes media responsibilities and maybe the politics of being a head coach as well. I'm not sure it would be Becky Hammon either. I mean, I think there's, you know, there are a lot of ex-Spurs out there that are part of the Popovich coaching tree. What happens if Brett Brown gets let go in Philadelphia? They've got a very close relationship, Pop and Brett Brown. Ime Udoka was an assistant coach on Pop's staff before going to Philadelphia. He's very highly regarded as Brett Brown's lead assistant. So I think those the current staff would be candidates, but I think they'd extend the search pretty far.
Woj just announced that the Bulls have fired Jim Boylan. It felt like a long time coming, and it felt like if you didn't fire him, you were going to have a player revolt. I mean, where have the Bulls been since Michael Jordan left?
I mean, in a perpetual state of rebuilding with one misstep after another. Now, they've been pretty decent at drafting over the years. You know, I mean, Derrick Rose was a slam dunk, but, you know, they got Jimmy Butler late in the first round. And, you know, Joakim Noah was drafted when nobody thought he was going to be the player he turned out to be. But with free agency, with some of these coaching hires, it hasn't gone their way. And look, it's curious that it took them this long. You know, the explanation that was given to me about why the Bulls were waiting this long on Jim Boylan was that there was only one other coaching opening, and they weren't going to hire the team was going to hire. That was Tom Thibodeau in New York. So they didn't feel a sense of urgency. There may be more urgency now, Dan. One of the reasons I think that the timing of this is right now is because you have teams going home, and you've got the Pelicans going home, and other teams will be bowing out, and there could be coaching changes on those staffs. The Pelicans, you know, widely believed to at some point will let go of Alvin Gentry. Philadelphia, you know, Brooklyn's going to have an opening at some point. Maybe the Bulls wanted to get started on their search now to try to get a jump on some of these other teams.
Yeah, well, I was just talking about the Pelicans, and McLovin said, who would you invest in right now if they were stocks, the Pelicans or the Suns? And I actually paused and said, I might go with the Suns. First of all, I love their coach, and Booker has taken that next step. I don't know how good they are as a team moving forward, but there's less drama in Phoenix than the potential drama that you have in New Orleans. Lonzo Ball mailed it in. Brandon Ingram, restricted free agent. Zion's health is always going to be an issue, and you might be firing your coach other than that. So who would you invest in?
To me, it's 6-1 in pick'em there. I mean, I like the Suns because I think Devin Booker has shown in these seeding games and this season in general that he can be a franchise player. I'd like the Suns more if they had drafted Luka Doncic and not drafted DeAndre Ayton in that spot. I'm not a huge Ayton guy. I've watched him pretty closely as the Suns have made this rise. He's a little passive around the rim. He doesn't have great hands. There's something about him that I think has a bit of a ceiling. And that would give the Suns a ceiling. But you're right about Monty Williams. He's going to be the coach of the seeding games as the NBA is going to hand out those awards in the next couple of days. The reason I would lean towards the Pelicans, look, Zion was hurt this year, but how many guys have we seen hurt in their first or second years? I mean, Joel Embiid missed like two full seasons, and then he was just fine. I think Zion's going to be okay, and I'm a big believer in Brandon Ingram. I mean, Brandon Ingram is a star on the rise.
But is he going to – what's he going to cost you? And well, I mean, going to stay.
He's a max guy on the second contract. Everybody's a max guy on the second contract that is like around that range. And that second contract isn't enormous by NBA standards. So those two guys I like more long-term than Booker and Ayton as a twosome.
We're talking to Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated NBA senior writer. You were there to watch the Blazers and the Nets. I've been giving credit to the Nets because those guys are playing hard. They, you know, this is their chance to showcase, and they did not stop. The Blazers, I know you're high on the Blazers. You were on that bandwagon before anybody else. It feels like they're limping towards the finish line, and they looked exhausted last. I wouldn't be surprised if Memphis won the first game between these two. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, I mean, first off, quickly on the Nets, like, I walk past them at their practice all the time. I was in their practice. I could name like four guys off the top of my head that are on that team. Yeah. And it's like the guys that have been around, Joe Harris and Jared Allen. What Jock Vaughn did with this group going 5-3 is nothing short of David Copperfield-like magic. I mean, it's incredible the job he did there. The Blazers, I liked seeing C.J. McCollum get off last night. The way he was playing after having a real struggle in the previous game and the report coming out about the broken back, to see him play that way gave me a little bit more encouragement about the Blazers in the playoffs. But they don't defend anybody, and they haven't really defended anybody throughout these eight seeding games. Nurkic makes a lot of mistakes at that five spot. I don't think the Grizzlies can give them a lot of trouble. I mean, the Grizzlies got in because Giannis headbutted Moritz Wagner and Wagner, and then they were missing him and didn't have anything to play for Milwaukee. I don't think they take that game off. I think the Blazers get in. But I'm far less bullish on Portland's chances to upset the Lakers now than I was maybe at the start of this, when they were fully healthy and they were looking like a team on the rise. I just think the McCollum injury bothers me. And as several coaches have said to me when I've raised this question to them in the bubble, who defends LeBron?
Yeah.
Like, you can do I'll say all you want about the backcourt and the frontcourt. Who defends LeBron? It's an interesting storyline, Dan, because, I mean, Carmelo versus LeBron and perhaps Carmelo's last chance to do something meaningful in the postseason. But I don't know how they pull that off.
But you got Lillard and McCollum and Anthony and Gary Trent Jr. Those guys are among the top six guys as far as minutes played. And now you're going into at least – you got one more game, maybe a couple games here with Memphis, and then you go in against the Lakers. And you're right about – you know, the Lakers haven't been shooting well, but the Blazers might be just what they need to go against a team that doesn't play defense.
It's true, but, I mean, the Lakers have been getting open looks. I mean, some of the games I've been at, like, these looks the Lakers are getting are open. They're just missing them. And – you know, J.R. Smith, I think he's shooting like 16% from three-point range. And you're going to rely on Dion Waiters and some of these other guys to make shots. I mean, they're really vulnerable at this stage. Maybe not in the first round, but, you know, outside of – I mean, you heard LeBron say after the game where Kyle Kuzma made that game-winning three, like, he's like, we need him to be our third best player. I mean, they need a consistent Kyle Kuzma to win anything in this whole thing. You know what you're going to get from LeBron. AD's been great as well. But they need Kuzma to be efficient, to score 15 to 20 points. And if they don't get that, they're vulnerable to any team in this bracket.
I think AD has to be superstar. He's got to be the best player on the floor. I think Kuzma has to look like an all-star. And LeBron is going to fill in the gray area there. But that's asking a lot. It really is, because I still look at the Clippers and say, it feels like the Clippers are exactly where they want to be. We're not really talking about them. You know, they don't make headlines. They're going to have everybody together, and it feels like Doc may have something here, and he knows it too.
Well, the Clippers, to me, are going to be a test of, can you flip that proverbial switch? I think they'll win that first round matchup handily against the Mavericks, because Dallas is just limping into the playoffs right now with the way they're playing. But beyond that, you know, you mentioned the guys, they have all their guys back, but they're just getting them back. They're just trickling in. Montrezl Harrell, a front runner for sixth man, is going to make his debut tonight, you know, for the Clippers. So, you know, getting these guys up to speed and on the same page on the fly when you're basically playing every other day is going to be a challenge. Now, it's a challenge that is a little bit more, you know, manageable when you have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, who's played well during this run-up. But, I mean, chemistry matters, continuity matters, and the Clippers haven't had any of it, you know, for the better part of the last month. So if they get a tough matchup in that second round, you know, I think they're vulnerable as well.
And the East looks like a mess. First-round matchups doesn't look like there's any surprises in store there, right?
No, probably not. But I think it gets fascinating when you get past that. I mean, it's strange to say, but the way Milwaukee's kind of been up and down and Giannis has been frustrated throughout this whole process, you almost have to make the Raptors a co-favorite right now, which is the most remarkable thing you could possibly say. Like, you mentioned my idiot comment back in September about the Lakers. Like, the idea that the Raptors could be sitting here as a conference contender, as a potential co-favorite to go to the finals, is insane. I mean, this team, and I've been watching them a lot down here in the bubble, and some of the observations are that they're an incredibly smart team, like a high IQ team from like 1 to 10. Like, they make the right play way more often than not. And when I talk to Raptors executives there, the one thing they often say is that Kawhi Leonard's gone, but Kawhi Leonard still lives with this team. Like, the mental toughness that Kawhi instilled on these young guys like OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet, like, that still lingers with this team. And that's actually something that's going to help them as they get into the playoffs. So they've got questions too. You know, can Siakam make that leap in the postseason? Can VanVleet make another jump in the postseason? But the way the Bucks have played, I mean, I think they're vulnerable as well. And the Raptors might be the team, because of their size, that could be the one that takes them out.
I love what the Heat have done. I love what Pat Riley's done with that. I mean, it's really amazing when you think, you know, Wade retiring, LeBron leaves, Bosch has to retire. And all of a sudden, he just starts to get a couple of draft picks. And, out of Bio, came out of nowhere, it felt like. Jimmy Butler there, wants to be there and play with that team. Duncan Robinson, they find. I mean, Tyler Hero, it's an interesting team. I don't know if it's a great team, but boy, Pat Riley did a great job. He did.
And how you build successful teams is hitting on those mid-round picks and further back, right? You're supposed to hit on those top-level picks. But what they've done with Tyler Hero, what they've done with Bam Adebayo, is going to be the most improved player this year. Duncan Robinson, undrafted. You watch Duncan Robinson play, and you're looking around like, what did people miss with this guy? I mean, he's like 6'8", and makes threes, and has that kind of mindset where he always wants the ball. So what did teams miss with that guy? The one, you know, where the Heat missed, and where I'm sure, and I know that the Heat front office and the coaching staff think about this all the time, especially down here in the bubble, was it the 2015 draft when they drafted Justice Winslow and they could have had Devin Booker? They loved Devin Booker. He had an unbelievable workout for them down in Miami, and there was a big split within that organization about Devin Booker over Justice Winslow. If they had Devin Booker right now, Dan, we'd be looking at the Heat in a whole new light. We mentioned Doncic, that's a recent example, but Booker Winslow, I mean, that's a big turning point for an organization.
All right, so make a prediction here.
Oh, great.
Paulie, are we rolling on this?
Always.
Okay, all right.
I am going with Raptors-Clippers in the finals.
Raptors-Clippers. Didn't sound definitive on that.
It's just so weird down here, Dan, the way teams are playing and the vulnerabilities of these top seeds that I didn't see before. Simple as that. Like, the Lakers, they're kind of shooting like I thought they'd shoot the pre-pandemic season. And the Bucks, they look great in the exhibition games, and I was bullish on them then. And then they come into the seeding games and don't play quite as well. And Giannis looks a bit out of sorts. I just, every time I watch the Raptors, and they've gotten blown out, I think at least once, during these games. But every time I look at the Raptors, they look the most locked in of any team in this bubble. And I just got to think that counts for something.
Are you going stir crazy? We've seen some of the players, it feels like, going stir crazy.
Oh, no. Well, I have no life. What else would I be doing?
Are you allowed to bring in somebody who's a friend, or is that just basketball players who are allowed to do that?
Yeah, I'm actually scrolling Instagram as we speak to see what's happening there. No.
You're
players.
Not...
Okay. Coaches can't do it either. So it's players only.
Players only.
I love this, and you've talked about the memo, I'm sure. But like, as one GM said to me, like he said, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but he's like, when it comes to this, players are playing chess, and the NBA is playing checkers. You're going to see an interesting looking Aunt Thelma coming into this bubble.
Like, well, it can't be any more embarrassing than what happened to that Seattle Seahawk, where he had his girlfriend dress up as a player and tried to sneak him by security.
It's also kind of stupid, Dan, because like, as long as these whoever comes in, no matter what they are, family member, you know, short time girlfriend, like as long as they are tested, who cares who they bring in? Like, if you allow them to bring in whoever they want, as long as they go through the protocols, that prevents them from doing something crazy like what you're talking about. That prevents them from going to the golf course and then having, you know, three people on the ninth hole and then four on the 10th hole as somebody, you know, comes scrambling in off the green. So I just think as long as they're being tested, who cares, who or what relationship they have with the people that come in.
Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you again, Chris.
You got it, Dan.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. I didn't realize it, but I guess it's National Roller Coaster Day coming up maybe this weekend. And we started talking about, we're talking about it during the live look-in. And I'm not a roller coaster guy. And I grew up in right by Kings Island where you have this unbelievable theme park. And we had the Beast there at Kings Island. And I worked at Kings Island, so we got to ride the rides. You'd get to go in for free one day a week. And I never wanted to ride the roller coaster. Just, I don't like that feeling where your stomach separates from the rest of your body. The twists and turns and all of that. I don't need that. And then Todd told us a story. What was it called? Tilt-A-World?
Tilt-A-World. At Nellie Bly in like the Sheepshead Bay area in Brooklyn. And
but that's not a roller coaster. It just spins around.
Right. It doesn't go up or down or anything. And it's pretty tame for most people. But for me, it was just like a horror show.
How old were you?
I would say 9, maybe even 10.
And describe the scene.
I'm sitting with a couple of friends of mine. It could fit 3 when, at that age, 3 across. I was sitting in the middle. You put the bar down so you don't go flying out of the thing. And it starts, and I'm thinking it's okay for the first 10, 15 seconds. Then it starts spinning and moving around a lot faster than I had envisioned, that the guys didn't really explain to me how quickly it was going to move around. So I'm begging the guy that's controlling the thing to slow it down or stop it.
So while it's going.
While it's going, I'm trying to scream to the guy. And as I'm getting closer, I'm like, stop, please, shut it, stop the ride. And finally, about halfway through, he stopped it. I'm trying to time my scream to when we're going to be coming up to the point where I could see the guy that's moving the lever there and pressing the buttons.
What are your friends saying?
They were hysterical laughing, and they were embarrassed for me and everyone around, and they had to restart the ride because everyone, whatever tickets, whatever they paid to go on the
ride. So when it started to go around, you would wait until you got close to the guy who was running it.
Yeah, and I'm in tears, and I'm screaming, and I'm holding onto my skee ball tickets, and they're all crumpled up, with you roll the ball to get, and it was just a total disaster, and I'm like, please stop the ride, get me off of this, and he finally got me off, and I was dizzy, and it was
It's like the Mechanical Bull in Dallas.
Yeah,
that was on the slowest setting.
It brought back some bad memories. The Mechanical Bull brought me back to the camp days.
Get me down off this.
I'll never go on a roller coaster. That's crazy.
Just had hernia surgery. Get me down.
I had just gotten.
We were talking about the Spurs. Aren't you always just not that far removed from hernia surgery?
Unfortunately, it's just always within a few months of some type of surgical procedure.
Was that after the Tilt-A-Whirl when you were 10, the hernia surgery? Is that the first one?
Yeah. I'm sure there was something going on with me. An appendix was taken out. Something happened.
Yeah, you always have something that could fall out at any moment, it feels like.
I either just had stitches or some type of sutures are moving around. They haven't fully healed yet.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Speaking of football, he's the head coach at Arizona State. Good to welcome back Herm Edwards. How are you doing, Coach?
I'm doing fine, my friend, and I'm looking at your studio there, and I'm realizing that you have a lot of memorabilia there, right? I'm watching it all, and I'm looking at all the little things you have, but I can tell you this now. You're a pretty good collector of that stuff, I understand. You don't have one of these.
Ooh. Not yet. A Herm Edwards bobble doll. Bobblehead.
Okay. And now, this is going to date us. You don't have this.
Oh, where you pick up the fumble. The Pisarcik fumble. I never saw that one, Herm.
Come on. Yeah, look at that. Somebody gave this to me. It's unbelievable. I said, really? I said, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah. One of the great moments. Well, it was a great moment for you in NFL history, but that gave you immortality, right?
That kept me current, right?
By the way, and that's when we – taking a knee was invented because of that play, the missed handoff by Joe Pisarcik to, that was Larry Zonka?
Yes, it was Larry Zonka, correct.
Oh, my God.
1978. We're aging ourselves, partner. We're aging ourselves.
Do you have that football?
I do. I have that one, and I give you the next one I have. I've got obviously a few, but that one was important. But I give you one that was most important. My first NFL interception was against the Los Angeles Rams. In the Coliseum, and the quarterback was?
Joe Namath.
There you go.
You know, Joe is such a great guy. He'd probably sign that if you asked him to.
Dan, here's a great story. So I get it's my rookie year. We play the Rams, and I intercept the ball, and I take it to the sideline, and they put the tape on it, right? So the game ends. We're walking out of the Coliseum. I have the ball. I'm a rookie now. First NFL interception. I'm a rookie. And I'm walking, and I see Joe. He's in front of us. And I said, I asked a couple of bets. You think he'd autograph this? Leave it alone.
Yeah, probably not right after the game. No. But if you saw Joe right now, Joe would probably do it.
No, he's a good man.
Did you, so every interception you had, you kept?
No. Because I've had, 33 in regular and another 5 in playoffs. I had about 38 of them.
Yeah.
But no, but the special ones, you know, situations, whatever it may be. But yeah, I've got a few.
We talked to Chip Kelly yesterday, and he was, you know, it wasn't Chip Kelly the coach. It was Chip Kelly the person, where he was just saying, look, you know, I understand it. And, you know, we're in a hot spot here, and it's tough to be able to tell these kids that we're not going to be playing football, but there's bigger issues here. And, you know, you're a deep thinker. You're obviously emotional. You know, when you first got the word that you're not going to play football, how long did it take before then you get together with your team?
It wasn't very long. They knew, you know, they knew a decision was going to be made, because we've actually had walkthroughs. We've been meeting, all those things. And I told them, when we get off the field, and we went to the field to have a walkthrough, I said, we're going to know something. And sure enough, by, you know, 1 o'clock, I had to address them and tell them the news. And it was very difficult. There's no doubt. And I think it's difficult for everyone. When you think about it,
but you know, this is, this to Coach Kelly, and maybe you could help me with this. Why aren't we getting the medical community in the ACC, SEC, and, you know, the Big 12 together with the Big 10 and the Pac-12? So your doctors, their doctors can exchange information here, Herm.
Well, that's a good question. And I don't know if they've done that. I don't know. I don't even want to try to play armchair quarterback, obviously, but we knew going into this, and it was going to be led by our professionals, our healthcare professionals. We knew that when this thing started, like 5 months ago, right? And they were going to give us a game plan. And I think as it got closer, Dan, to having to really go out and try to participate in practice, we've had walkthroughs. Players have been working out for 2 months, but the practice deal, and then obviously with this new thing about the heart and all that, that all these things became a factor when they said no. And I said this, Dan, I think every school has done a nice job of really creating this bubble. That's the big term now, bubble, right? Well, next Thursday, we start school. Whole different element comes in now, right? Because of the socialness of young people. And how do you prevent that? How do you, it's hard. It's hard.
But do you even know what you're allowed to do as you move forward in the fall as a head coach?
Well, right now, we're under the same requirements we were before we postponed, in the fact that you had 20 hours. Now, they will give us a schedule. Speaking of schedules, I've got a schedule I've already mapped out until Thanksgiving, what we are going to try to do, right? And you got to keep it interesting. You got to keep players engaged, which is very tough, along with coaches. But that's what we got to try to do right now.
But why can you practice and not play?
Well, we never practiced. It was walkthrough.
Okay.
Not practice.
Okay.
We were going to actually start practicing on the 17th. That never occurred.
Do you think there's going to be spring football?
Oh, I'm
hoping, but
there's a lot of balls to juggle here. And I think a lot of people, you know, are asking the question, how can they play like a full season? I would give them this if I was sitting in that seat trying to orchestrate this, and if it came to fruition where we could play, I would do this in our conference. I would let the South play against the South, the North against the North. That would give you 5 games, And then the winners of both those conferences play. That would give you six, and you could crown a champion. Then if you came back in the fall, you'd actually play 18 games. LSU played 17 games last year.
Yeah.
Right? So that way, seniors that played six games, it doesn't count. They could come back. They could also leave to go to the draft. So you would kind of help both parties there. And I heard you earlier when you were talking about, you know, people playing like in the winter. And you're right. I mean, all of a sudden, the Washington schools, you look on your schedule, you know, our schedule would be we play Utah and Colorado. Depending on when we played them, we'd be okay, right? If we Colorado was here, we're good.
Yeah.
We had to go to Utah. That, you'd only probably get one cold game on our side of it. On the other side, if the Washington schools, the Oregon schools, that gives you a little bit of a problem if you're Stanford maybe, because you'd have to go on those elements.
If I don't know if your kids, your athletes said, hey, why is the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 playing and we're not playing, Coach?
Right. I mean, that's going to be the question. And I told them is this, look, we're going to go by the game plan of our physicians. That's what we got to do. And I said, we're not going to play armchair quarterback. I'm not going to try to do it. That's not my – I just got to keep you guys whole. I got to keep my coaching staff whole. So I'm wishing them a lot of luck. I really am. I'm hoping they can get through it. That would be fantastic. But we'll just – as well as the NFL.
Yeah,
NFL hasn't started yet either. I mean, we're going to see this thing unfold.
What are you going to do on Saturdays?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. Yeah. Well, I even got to Saturday yet. I don't know. I mean, you know, I know this. I dealt with the 9/11 deal. I was the head coach of the Jets. My first season of rookie head coach. And I dealt with that. And I know how that was like, whoa, right? It was one of those deals like, are you kidding me? Right. The unexpected.
Yeah.
I mean, that was truly the unexpected. And dealing with that for 2 weeks. But then the emotion of when we actually got to play again. We played New England in New England. Dan, I tell you what, it was unbelievable. I mean, the national anthem, the flag, the whole deal, man. There was not a dry eye in the stadium, you know? I'm looking forward to that again. That's what I'm trying to remember. When we actually get back to playing again. That's my hope. That's what it's going to look like.
When you coached against Belichick, I always wondered, do you almost out-coach yourself in preparing to coach against Belichick?
Well, I think the thing that Bill has done, you know, and he's a fantastic Hall of Fame coach, obviously, you always have to understand that you have to have the ability to adjust on both sides of the ball. In other words, you could come in with this plan of, well, they ran this front defensively, right? And you're going, I'm going to play against this front. And all of a sudden, you think it's a 4-3, and now it's 3-4. You're going, ah! You're still going, we got a plan, but a plan that can't be changed is a bad plan. You got to be able to change your plan and adjust, right? So you got to know that and figure it out. So it's always a chess game. But if you understand that going in, you're going to be okay.
But when you go against Brady,
yes.
Like, there's nothing about Brady that, like, you go, oh, my God, from the standpoint of the physical aspect of it. You know, like, there's other people with better arms, obviously more mobility, like, all of these things. So now it's the thinking process of, and it feels like it's harder to outthink somebody who's maybe smarter than you than it is to take on somebody who has athleticism.
No, and Tom's, and look, I've always said, we're the starter of all this, of the Tom Brady career, because I was sitting there when we knocked out Bledsoe, Mo Lewis hit Bledsoe, and in comes Tom, in comes this guy, Tom Brady, and he comes in the game, and we're in New England, and we're playing, and, you know, we end up winning that game. It was a low-scoring game, and then he comes back like 3 or 4 weeks later, and they play us, you know, and then you kind of watch, and you go, uh-oh. And for the rest of my career, that division, you're not going to deal with Captain America. I'm going, come on, man.
Did you even have a scouting report on Tom Brady?
We did when he came out, you know, and it was funny because, you know, it's funny because you look at scouting reports and all that and you go, hey, I get all that, but can the guy play quarterback? And boy, can he play quarterback. And I always tease him when I see him. I say, you know, I said, remember, I gave you this opportunity, man.
Mo Lewis should go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And you know what? And I was a little bit, I don't know if I was surprised, but I didn't know. I thought he might not leave, you know?
He was so unhappy. He wanted to have fun, Herm.
But I thought he might be a guy that just ends his career there, you know, and just. But I start laughing. I said, look, if he wanted to go on the boat in the end zone, I said, you know, I work for Tampa. I said, I'd give him a free pass.
I think Brady just wanted to have fun. And as strange as that may sound to people, he was in a business. I mean, I don't know. I just think he wanted to. Give me some weapons here. He goes down there. All of a sudden, I got weapons here.
Well, yeah, all of a sudden guys start coming out of retirement, right? But I think, you know, with Bruce being down there, Bruce Arians and good friend, and we coached together in Kansas City. I've known Bruce forever. And it's funny, Bruce, he was the head coach. He was on the Temple staff when I was in Philly playing. How about that?
Oh, wow.
And then we worked together in Kansas City when Marty was the coach. He was the running back coach, right? So, you know, Bruce, he'll relate. He'll do things that Tom probably likes, you know. And like you said, Tom was there forever. I mean, he's a legend in New England and all that stuff, and rightly so, he deserves it.
Yeah, I just think he wanted to just exhale. And, you know, because it's always, you know, who's more important, Belichick or Brady? And, you know,
they're both together, hard to beat.
Well, I want to see what – are you interested in see what he does with Cam Newton?
Yeah. And, I covered Cam in college when I was doing SEC games. And I think this is one of those moments that Cam kind of likes. Because people are probably saying, well, you know, it'll be interesting to see.
Chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, kind of that deal, right? And they'll use his talent now. They will have some design plays in there where all of a sudden he's running the ball, right? He's coming at you with the ball in his hand. You tell you what, he's something now.
Oh, it's great to catch up with you. And, you know, if you get lonely and you just, you know, you want to talk, then, you know, you can always – you can call me. We can Zoom. Yeah, I'm available over the weekend too, Herm. Yeah,
we're in the same era. We can go back to those days. You know, when you mentioned outside, when the I call them the Vikings, but they're not the real Vikings. You mentioned how cold it was going to be. I can remember going to play those guys, and Fran Tarkenton was the quarterback, and Ahmad Rashad was the receiver, and it was so cold, right? And Nate Wright had played DB for him. He was a friend of mine. He comes by the hotel and say, "Hey, man. You know, when it's so cold, Fran got small hands. He can't throw the ball in these kind of conditions." I said, "Really?" So I tell the defensive line, "Listen to this, Dan. He goes back 52 times and throws
the ball." with his small hands in the cold weather.
Yeah, and we're outside, man. And I'm trying to come from a monitor shot. I said, "This ain't a fair fight." Oh, boy.
It's great to talk to you. I appreciate your time and love your enthusiasm, man. Ben, good luck. I know you got a lot on your plate here coming up, but good to check in with you.
You too, man. God bless you.
Thank you, man. That's Herm Edwards, Arizona State head football coach. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR. Or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. I believe a three-sport athlete in high school, football, basketball, and track. Todd Gurley joins us with a Phillies hat on. What are you doing with a Phillies hat on?
Oh, it matched my outfit. I got a Bart Simpson shirt on. My question is, y'all got any lamb chops over there on that Traeger grill?
We can make some. Are you?
It's a great option.
Are you a griller?
Yeah, I love the grill.
All right. Do you have a go-to?
Probably lamb chop, pork chop.
Nice.
Beyond Burgers. Rotwurst.
So everything. Let me see your shirt. Let me see your shirt. Can you tilt down and?
I don't know how I do it. It's like a little Bart Simpson shirt.
Oh, okay. So the only reason why you have the hat on is it matches Bart Simpson. I like that.
I got love for Philly too, the city of brotherly love. So
yeah, but you grew up in Maryland, or born in Maryland, grew up in North Carolina.
Yeah, and I got the Orioles tatted on me, but sometimes they make me just so angry, man.
Wait, you have an Orioles tattoo?
Yeah.
Where is it?
Like my stomach, that area.
Is that one of those tattoos you regret?
They're making me regret it.
But if they win the World Series, you're going to be the first to say, look at my tattoo here.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. It's hard. It's hard, though, with the Yankees, the Red Sox, like, you know, trying to compete with those guys as well.
Yeah, it's like trying to compete with the Patriots.
Yeah, basically.
Did you get any grief when you wished Tom Brady a happy birthday a couple of years ago? Didn't you have an actual goat?
Oh, yeah. Well, because we share the same birthday, and it's just like, you know, it's Tom Brady's birthday, basically, and then mine's like second.
So when they say famous people born on this day, it's Tom Brady, and then it gets to you right after that?
Nah, just Tom Brady and then everybody else.
I noticed that you're selling your house in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
Now, you bought that from Taylor Lautner? Is that the Twilight guy?
No. Yeah, I bought that house from him, but I'm selling my place that I was in when I was playing in Los Angeles.
Okay.
So anybody want to buy a house, you know, 5-bedroom, 6-bath, y'all let me know.
But did you meet Taylor Lautner when you bought that? Oh, you did?
Yeah. Pretty cool dude.
Did he know who you were?
Yeah, he's a Saints fan, though, so you know how that goes now.
So he didn't give you a discount?
Just a little bit.
So how weird is it that, you know, you're trying to get ready for that football season? It's 4 weeks from last night.
Yeah.
Like, what's your day like? What is a normal day like at training camp?
I mean, I keep telling people it's really not training camp. Like, training camp is when we used to wake up and get at the facility at 8 a.m. and we was in it at 8 or 9. Now it's like, you know, virtual meetings in the dorm rooms or, you know, at the house. So it's a lot easier than it was. You know, I'm not going to complain being a vet in this league, but, I mean, really just come in the building. You know, you do an hour of meetings. Well, right now we're starting practice. Then right after practice, you get lunch, recovery, and then we'll start meetings for about two to three hours. And then after that, we'll do the walkthrough. And then our day is pretty much over with around about 6 o'clock. So it could always be worse. That's why I'm not complaining. I've been through the long days of training camp for 2-3 weeks.
How tough is it going to be for the rookies, though, Todd?
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be a lot tougher for them just far as getting the opportunity to make the team. But not only that, you know, when it's time to play, it's going to be very difficult. But that's when we got to do a good job of getting those guys ready in practice every day, you know, showing them full speed reps. Because once things amp up, it gets going pretty fast. So just trying to tell them, you know, just control what you can control. It's a tough situation for everybody, and everybody kind of got to be on the same page right now. But just keep inspiring them and just giving them knowledge.
What is why the Falcons?
It was just the right fit for me. You know, I feel like same style of offense. Obviously, you know, they have a great offense. And then, you know, Coach John Quinn, he's heard tremendous great things about him. I felt like, you know, this system, the brotherhood kind of fit me. You know, talking with Julio, obviously wanting to play with a great receiver like that. Guys like Ridley, Russ. And then, you know, we had a younger running back room, so it was time for me to go in and be able to share my knowledge as well, get those guys ready for when I'm not here and those guys ready for the future. But, and then, I mean, I play here at Georgia, man, University of Georgia Bulldog, now Atlanta Falcon. Can't really name too many Bulldogs that went and did that. So it's kind of like it's a blessing. It's a blessing.
How competitive was practice? So you have Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, and you at Georgia. Damn.
Yeah. It was great. I feel like our running back coach McClendon, B-Mac, he gave us a lot of good, you know, words of encouragement, a lot of good coaching, but he showed us how to practice. I know that's one thing about the NFL. It's really about practice. Game day is going to take care of itself. I felt like we did a good job. I did a good job of setting that standard. And then, obviously, you see what those guys did when I left. You know, they broke all the records. And, you know, Hats off to those guys. They led Georgia to a national championship. Didn't get it done, but, you know, they did things beyond what I was able to do. So can't be do nothing but be proud of those guys. You got Chubb, number two in rushing last year, Sony, Super Bowl champion. So, you know, it's just good to see the young guys, you know, get their shine on.
He's Todd Gurley of the Atlanta Falcons joining us, Dan Patrick Show. You were in that Gatorade commercial with Zion and Bryce Harper. Did you get to hang out with those guys?
No, we all did it at our house. So I did it at my house in California. And then I guess Bryce did his maybe in Florida or Philly. And then Zion did his in New Orleans. So it was like a kind of like this meeting right here. It was like a Zoom shoot.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. I was impressed with that. How long does it take before you move on past the Super Bowl loss?
I really try not to think about it too much. It's long gone. You know, I don't really talk about it until like people ask me. So it's still difficult to think about, but you know, it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, but and then you go to a city like Atlanta where they don't want to talk about their Super Bowl appearance either.
But it's so funny. You know, we got a lot in common. It's just like, I can relate to them. So, no other team I would want to be back with or be with than the Falcons, so we can get our payback for sure.
How's your health? How are the knees?
It's been good, man. I've been feeling good. The recovery time's been great. You know, obviously been on the same plan that I've been on since I came into the league. You know, going to have a couple off days during camp or whatnot, but I've been feeling good, just kind of taking it day by day. Got a good strength coach over here, Marty and his staff. So it's been good, man. I can't complain. You know, just chucking away day by day.
Yeah, you got – I don't know if you have a chip on your shoulder, but if you do, I certainly understand it. Because it feels like – you're only 26, I think. I mean, it feels like people have moved on from Todd Gurley. Do you feel that?
It's just part of the NFL, especially with the running back position. Kind of like we just die overnight. It's just like, oh, he don't have it anymore. You know, that's kind of one thing. I feel like they tend to do a lot with the running backs. But I know what I've done in this league. I know everything I'm capable of. I don't really try to go out my way to prove anything to anyone. I hear everything. But at the end of the day, I know who I am as a player. But more as a teammate, you know. When you start letting the outside noise get to you and you start bringing it to that locker room, you know, your teammates or your coaches are questionable, then that makes it a lot bigger. As long as I can control what I control, just try to be positive every day and just go out to practice and work. You know, that's all I can do. So it's kind of like the norm for me now. You know, I've been hearing it over the last couple of years. And I don't really want to say chip, but, you know, it's definitely – you know, I just want to go out there. Everybody want to go bald.
Well, I'm looking at these numbers. The 5 years, first 5 years, 70 total touchdowns. You got 58 rushing, 12 receiving. That's tied for fourth most in NFL history by any player over his first five seasons. So LaDainian Tomlinson is one. Yeah. Emmitt Smith, two. Sean Alexander, who played with the Seahawks. Then Jerry Rice. You're tied with Jerry Rice for touchdowns over the first 5 years of your NFL career. That's pretty pretty good company that you're in there, Tom.
Yeah, it's a blessing. And I went down a bunch of touchdowns too, so could be top three. But like I said, it's a blessing. Like I know what I've done in this league, but it doesn't really matter. This league is about what you can do week in and week out. It's not about what you've done in the past or what you're going to do in the future. You have to be able to prove it. That's why you know, you see guys like Tom Brady, who's been consistent for years. You know, he's going on his 19th year. And, you know, everyone's going to have a down year. But, like, when you just set the standard so high, what I've been able to do, you know, these last 5 years, it's like, you know, people expect more. And I expect more out of myself as well. So, you know, it comes with the territory. You just got to keep working hard. And
now you get to see Brady twice a year now.
Yeah,
be careful what you ask for there. You get to You know,
I'm not asking for anything. I'm just, you know, I just wanted to be a great game, but it's gonna be different, but it's gonna be fun. I'm excited. It's a new division for me. A lot of new talent. I've been able to play against New Orleans basically every year since I came in the league, and you know, played against Tampa a couple times, played against Carolina, played against the Falcons. So, I mean, I'm excited.
Did you feel bad at all for the Saints when that bad call in the Superdome?
No, not at all. Why would I ever feel bad?
I don't know. Because you know that you guys got a gift there.
Hey.
You can admit it now. You're not with the Rams.
Hey, the call was the call. And it was a no call.
Did you watch Hard Knocks with the Rams? Coach McVay had his shirt off. Did you see that?
Nah. I was watching the Chargers, man. My boy Melvin Ingram out. I heard he got a new song that dropped. So I've been just checking them guys out.
Oh, so you watched the Chargers part of Hard Knocks. You didn't watch the Rams
one? Yeah. I take like a restroom break when the Rams.
Did McVay take his shirt off a lot during practice?
Nah, I ain't never seen that. he acting up. He acting totally different now.
For TV, that's probably why.
Did he look big at least? Was he swole?
Yeah, I guess. He's yoked up a little bit.
Give him some credit. He works hard, though. He'd be working out. He'd definitely work out.
Hey, it's great to catch up with you. And have fun there in Atlanta. And thanks for joining us. We appreciate your time, Todd.
All right, y'all. Be safe. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Todd Gurley, the Atlanta Falcons running back, joining us. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.